Eagles.
Yeah, we got your headlines right here in this Halloween. Chase Young is now a San Francisco 49er, and all he cost the Niners was a third-round pick, a third-round conditional pick. Right, Kyle?
Yeah, this is a great move for John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. You know, you have an opportunity to bring in a former number two overall pick who's 24 years old, complete stud, 5 sacks this season in, 7 games. And so, you know, the Niners are at a point, sure, they have holes to fill, but as a fan, I never would, say, oh, why'd you go out and get this guy? Like, you get as much talent as you can if you're the Niners. And John Lynch and those guys, they see an opportunity here. They brought in Randy Gregory. It was an issue, obviously, the defensive line. Now you add Chase Young. And so I'm all for ownership, management, going out there, whatever you think you need to win, go get it. And that's what the Niners are doing.
Another headline, Adolis Garcia, the Rangers right fielder, absent from the lineup for Game 4 of the World Series. One day after tweaking his left side on a swing. For those of you still following this World Series, which a lot of people say, hey, it's been a great World Series so far. And Mike Bibby is the newest analyst of the newest member of the Kings broadcast crew. And Mike Bibby is going to join us at 4:15. And Kyle just checked in with him, and I guess it's a good thing you did.
Yeah, Mike Bibby was golfing today, he told me. And I just texted him. I'm like, Mike, 15 minutes, bro. You got to be ready. He's like, oh, man, I'm glad you texted me. I was about to take a nap. You know how it is when you play golf,
yeah.
18 holes, in my case, 120 swings at it, you know? Like, that takes a lot out of you, you know? Uh-huh. And so we're going to catch Mike Bibby before he takes his nap today.
On the chat here, YouTube chat, Amadrox says, Extro is a cautionary tale about what may happen if Daddy was kidnapped by aliens and then 3 years later he returns. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. That's exactly when I looked it up, and because I had forgot what it was. Remember, I left early before they even got deep into the plot, and so doesn't that sound scary?
It does. It sounds
very Daddy gets
creepy.
Taken by aliens, then he comes back 3 years later.
That
like
very creepy.
That's creepy. That might be something I'll watch today.
Me's on the text line 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140 says Whitey, NFL horror movie is obviously about my Denver Broncos. Mies, we forgot about that. You're
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
He says that the terror has been unlimited.
That's true, but they got a big win this past week. That's why I didn't include them, because they got that big win over Kansas City this last week.
That's right.
They did. We forgot about that, right?
Mm-hmm. It has been
signature
quite a year
win for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Before we bring in Mike Bibby, what kind of year, it's been what, a week, have we seen here in the NBA so far? I'll tell you what, with the Warriors getting ready to play, or the Kings playing the Warriors tomorrow night, I'm a little concerned about what's going on there with Golden State. CP3 coming off the bench, and it looks like that's working out well, Kyle. And I was assuming that would not work out.
No, CP3 is swallowing his pride, right? He's being a professional. And the one thing missing from his resume is a championship ring. And so that's why he's doing it. I get it. And here they are, what, 4 games, 5 games in. They look much better than I expected. And it's actually scary. If you're a Kings fan, I'm afraid of the Warriors because they really haven't played great. Like, they haven't played their best ball. Draymond's just getting back into the mix. Wiggins hasn't really played his best. So this Warriors team has a different level, another level to go to, which is scary. But go ahead. Let them play great right now in October. Play great in November. Steph can't keep this up, can he? He
can't I don't think so.
Like, he's at an age now. He's had some injury history as well. CP3's old, Draymond. And so they're going full bore right now, and they're playing great. I don't know, in January and February, can they be playing at this high level?
Yeah, Steph Curry, 42 points in 30 minutes Monday night, second of a back-to-back. So in the West so far, we got, it's early, but Denver 4-0, Dallas 3-0, Warriors 3-1, and OKC 3-1. So that's a little daunting from the Kings' perspective.
Yeah, and especially when you don't have your leader, De'Aaron Fox, coming up here at least tomorrow, and we presume it's going to be at least a week. And so when you look at it, I think the team that's most surprising, the Dallas Mavericks, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we thought they would be a dumpster fire.
Your buddy Hollinger liked them, I think.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
Oh, we may have to get Hollinger on.
We're trying.
But they haven't beaten anybody. They beat the Grizzlies. Grizzlies are winless still, believe it or not. They're one of the winless teams. The Nets, that's okay, you know. And they beat the Spurs as well. And so they're doing well, but I'm not still not buying on Dallas. But I think they're one of the most surprised teams so far that we've seen.
And we talked a little bit earlier about the James Harden deal. That's the big topic today in the NBA. So if I'm a Kings fan, Kyle, should I be, oh, no, James Harden's going to the Clippers. Oh, no, I'm scared.
No, not at all. And James Harden is a tremendous talent. He is a 20-10 guy last season. You know, if I'm correct, he led the NBA in assists or second, I think, maybe to Tyrese last season. Tremendous talent, but he doesn't fit what the Clippers are. The Clippers are best when Paul George has – he needs the ball in his hand. Paul George's not just going to be standing over in the corner. Kawhi Leonard, he needs to get into his bag as well. You know, what are you going to do with Russell Westbrook? You know, are you going to start him? James Harden and Russell Westbrook – in the starting lineup together? If this was 2015, it'd be awesome. It'd be amazing. But here we are in 2023. And so if I'm the Kings, I'm not worried about the Clippers any more today than I was the day before. Ultimately, it's still going to come down to Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and their health.
It seems like a desperate move. I'm not sure, yeah, though, because they've been talking. The Clippers and the Sixers have been talking for weeks. I thought maybe the Clips would get to the point where they'd say, you know what, there's nothing here that we need. We're walking away. But I don't know whether it's Paul George and Westbrook saying, no, we need this guy, or ownership feeling like, you know what, our superstars get hurt all the time. We need another one. Or they're trying to generate as much interest as they can before they move into the new building next year. I'm honestly not sure, other than the fact that Harden's been a good player, but I think there's more downside than upside. So I don't see why the Clippers wanted to make this trade.
Yeah, I don't see, because when you look at their roster, and I mentioned it before, James Harden is a scoring point guard. And I know he had a great season.
Ball dominant
point guard. You need somebody that can play off the ball as well. You know, maybe like a Derek White of the Celtics was available. Even a Malcolm Brogdon with Portland, or somebody like that. James Harden. And the issue with James Harden, and of course I watched him when he was with the Sixers very closely, he's feast or famine in the playoffs. You cannot count on this guy. And so that's why I think this is such a tremendous move for the Philadelphia 76ers. Sure, they give up a talent, but they weren't contenders with James Harden. Now this helps, you know, maybe they go out there and make another move. Maybe they go get OG Anunoby or Zach LaVine.
Marty's talking about, yeah, we're in good position right now to go get another really good player.
You got some assets now you could flip along with those draft picks. And so, to me, a lot of people are saying, man, the Sixers got fleeced on this. And I think the Sixers did great on this. The only team that was bidding for James Harden services was the Clippers. And so,
when there's one bidder, you're not supposed to be able to get much of value.
Right, right.
They did well.
And they did well. They got some good veteran players, some guys, you know, that can help you out this season. They got some draft picks that they can flip as well. And so I think this is an improved Sixers team. And now Tyrese Maxey gets to be the guy, the reigning Eastern Conference Player of the Week.
Start.
Yes, he's off to a great start. So this is a great move. I will say, when you look at the Pacific Division now, though, Whitey, look at the star power in this division. I mean, it was already there, obviously, but now you add another Hall of Fame talent into this division, man. And so the Pacific Division is going to be fun again.
Yeah, I wonder if that was part of the appeal. It's just for the Clippers. Like, everyone's paying attention to the Lakers still. We need more star power. I don't know. But as you say, James Harden, feast or famine. That's at one end. At the other end, it's famine or more famine, right? And there's just no way around that.
No, you're 100% right on that. I mean, he's not a good defender. He's a sieve defensively.
Defense doesn't really interest
him. All, exactly. There's no D in James Harden. It's James Harren.
Uh-huh.
You know,
right?
You like how I did that? Harren,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
On the fly. And so, no, it's funny because, and I bring this analogy up all the time, but I'm talking to my son this morning about this deal, and he's like, oh, my God, the Sixers, they got fleeced. They gave up everything. They gave up P.J. Tucker and James Harden. And I'm like, Nick, it's not 2K. It's not an NBA All-Star team you're trying to – you need pieces that fit together, and I don't think this fits. It reminds me of the Rockets when Barkley went there. Reminds me of the Lakers when Malone and GP went there. I don't think it's going to work.
I do think it makes – the Clippers more interesting, at least in the short term. I mean, I can't wait to see.
Right, I want to see
if
how
I'm
it
right.
works.
I don't think it'll work, but I can't wait to see if it does or not.
Yeah, they become much must-see TV. And, like, What is Russell Westbrook doing in this offense now?
I don't know, but that's why I'm thinking he must have been in favor of this, right?
Yeah.
He must have been pushing for it.
But he wanted out of Houston when they were together in Houston, too.
I
don't get it. I don't get it at all.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it makes the that's one of the things about the NBA, all this player movement. Certainly the drama makes it a lot more interesting, and it's great for the league to have that going on early in the year, and then we got the in-season tournament. Oh, boy, it's going to be a great season, right? Fingers crossed. How about the Kings? Where are they? Getting ready to go in to play the Warriors without De'Aaron Fox. We're going to find out from Kings legend and new Kings TV analyst, the one and only Mike Bibby, joins us when we come right back. It's the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports. Yeah, no tricks. Just a very special treat for you on this Halloween. Nice enough to join us. It's Drive Guys, Kyle Draper, Whitey Gleason. We've got Kings legend, brand new TV analyst. So basically a new teammate of yours, right, Kyle?
Yeah. Let me turn on my microphone. Yeah, Mike will be joining us on pregame, halftime, and postgame. And so it's my pleasure to join the Kings legend, Mike Bibby. Mike, I appreciate you holding off your nap for us, man. I know them 18 holes, man. It takes a lot out of us, man. I understand. Thanks for coming on with us.
It's rough. Thanks for having me on.
All right, man, let's dive right into it, man. An announcement made by the Kings and NBC Sports California today. You're going to be joining the broadcast team. What made you want to do this, and how much are you looking forward to making your debut tomorrow?
I'm kind of nervous, actually. You know, I mean, it's not something – like, I look back, it was never in my plans to really ever go into this. You know, I thought it's a good way to, you know, get back with the Kings and – you know, maybe just try to help and, you know, try to help the younger players, and maybe some of my talks, maybe constructive criticism could help them, you know, get better as a unit.
Mike, you were, as we all know, an excellent three-point shooter, but I think the most you ever took for a season was about 6 per game. How many threes would you and Peja be taking if you guys were playing today?
I mean, I'd take at least 15. If they're allowing everybody to take 20, I'd try to get at least 15. I wouldn't want to try to overdo it. 15 would be a good number for me.
Mike, is that the biggest change from when you played, would you say?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, me coming in, it was more play inside out, you know, throwing into the post, double teams. Now you play out the kickouts. And if you didn't double team, you know, they'll beat you on inside. So, I mean, yeah, that's a real big change in the game.
Yeah. Are there ways, Mike, in which – and maybe there aren't. I don't mean it to be a leading question, but are there ways that this team reminds you of your old Kings team?
I think they do. You know what I mean? They have the people that come off the bench that could, you know, that could come in and probably be starters on other teams. And the way Sabonis passes and the way the offenses run through him sometimes too, that kind of, you know, Vlade Divac remembrance of them too. So – yeah, I think so. I mean, they look good. They look really, really good. It's good to see them doing good again.
Mike Bibby joining us, Kings legend, of course, played 7 seasons in Sacramento, hit one of the biggest shots in Kings history during that playoff matchup with the Lakers. Mike, I want to continue on sort of comparing this year's team to your time with the Kings. One thing I see, you brought up Domantas Sabonis and his ability to pass, sort of like a Vlade, sort of like a C-Webb. How much easier does that make the game for guys like you when your big man can also handle the rock and dish?
It's something just you got to get used to. You know, I think you have to have a high IQ to do that. You know, I think the Warriors have that. I think the Kings have that. And it's not like a traditional offense that's ranch where the point guard brings it up and the offense is run through him and you play out of that way. So, I mean, I think you got to have high IQ players to play with a big man that could pass and you know, cut and make reads of how the defense is playing them.
I heard Sam Mitchell describe it this way once. Would you agree with this? Sam Mitchell said this offense, which, yeah, the Warriors and the Kings are similarities. He said it's not for everybody, but he said if you can shoot and you can move and you can think, you can play in this offense. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and it's hard to guard. You really can't prepare for it. And I think that's why it's so hard and the guys succeed at it so much is like when you go into – you know, to game time stuff and go over their offensive stuff, you really can't pinpoint on what they're going to do. So it's really hard to say, you know, they come to the corner, they dribble off, right? You know, I mean, it's hard to get ready for it. So, I mean, I think that's what makes the team so much better than the other guys.
Mike Bibby joining us here on The Drive, guys. Kevin Gleason, Kyle Draper. Mike, obviously the big news today in the NBA is James Harden going to the Clippers. He joins Paul George. He joins Kawhi Leonard, Russell Westbrook. How much better do you think the Clippers will be with a guy like James Harden?
I mean, you can't go wrong with James Harden, but you got four of them. I don't know how much of four of them are going to play at the same time, but there's only one ball. And, you know, I think two of the players need to have the ball in their hands at the same time. So, I mean, that's not my decision to make of when they play and when, what they do, but I think it'll be tough for them, you know, as far as Russell Westbrook. And I can't see Russell Westbrook spotting up or James Harden spotting up while other right. people do their stuff. Right. So, it might be tough. It looks good on paper, but you got to go out there and play the game, see how it works.
Mike, yeah, Jay Will was so popular here, but the Kings needed something, and then they traded him, they brought you in, and you helped solidify this unit and made it a championship-caliber team. Speaking of trades, would you be willing to tell us what you felt, what was going through your mind when you first found out you were traded to the Sacramento Kings?
I was elated. You know, I knew the owner of the Grizzlies. I remember, like it was yesterday, the owner of the Grizzlies came to me, and, you know, out of respect, he said, "Mike, there's, you know, we're going to move the team. We're going to move the team. And, you know, is there a destination you want to go? We'll probably put your place where you want to go." And I told him, "Yeah." He said, "Give me five places where you want to go." I gave him five places, and he asked me, "What's your number one spot you want to go?" And I said, "Sacramento." Mm. And the reason I played for the Grizzlies for 3 years, and I remember the last game of the season, no one really came to watch us play. Whenever we'd go, no one really came to watch us play. We're last place in the league and, you know, 20 games wins. And so we come in there, and I remember coming in, and it was sold out crowd. And I was like, the last game of the season, you know, everybody, we're ready to go home. And I was like, I would love to play in front of a crowd like this every night. And when how it happened, I was in the gym, and I'm shooting, and, you know, a friend of mine calls my brother, like, "Hey, your brother just got traded here." I was like, "No, I don't think so. I would have heard from my agent." So, I mean, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm in the gym. And, you know, you always know a trade happens when you go to your phone and you see two area codes, either the team you're playing with and the next team you're going to. So, I saw 916, and I seen a 604, so I knew it had happened. And, you know, I just let out a shout, like, you know, thank God. And I think that kind of jump started my career going to Sacramento. I know that. Shout out to Jay Will too, because I mean, I think he was one of the main reasons that he brought the excitement to Sacramento. So I figured it was going to be hard to take a guy's place like that coming in, but the fans, the team, they treated me like I had been there my whole career, and that's what made it so easy for me to go out there and play.
Wow. Mike Bibby, that's great stuff, man. I had never heard that story about being in the gym 1 a.m. and getting the word that you were going to be traded, and that Sacramento was at the top of your list. What was it about the team at this time? Did you look at the roster and see a C-Web and see a Vladi? Like, what was it about Sacramento? Was it just the crowd? And obviously we're feeling that right now with the return of the Kings to prominence. What was it about this team at that time?
The fans, the excitement that just to play with guys that played basketball how I was used to playing. Mm. You know, I never played in my life of coming down and throwing the ball in the post and hope it comes back out to me. I never played basketball like that. And so come, you know, our best players were, you know, Country Reeves and Sharif. So we went to them, and if, you know, they didn't shoot out of a double team or score the ball, then we got and got to play. But other than that, coming to Sacramento just to play real basketball again. And I remember my first practice, you know, I'd always hit in Vancouver, hit and just run through, go to the other side. And I remember passing the first pass, and I cut through, and I remember I had to duck. The ball almost hit me in my head. and Coach Carrillo, rest in peace, I love him. He was like, "Yeah, be careful. Ball's going to hit you in your damn head." And he just walked off. I said, "Okay, I got to be prepared." to play real basketball. So it was great.
You know, Mike, I'm glad you told that story because I'm sort of going through that on a personal level with my son. Like, he played with a group of guys and didn't have as much fun. It was pass the ball and then never get it back, you know, and he almost thought about giving up the game. Now he's fell in love with it again. And your teammates and your system can really impact your love of the game to an extent. How happy you are, right?
Yeah, definitely, for sure. You know, you get that, you know, some pickup games are like that. You get a pickup game, guy figures it's my turn now. You know, okay, if they throw the ball into me, I'm going to take the shot. So that's right. How it is sometimes when you're playing pickup like that. So, I mean, it definitely takes a toll on how you play.
Mike Bibby with us. He's a brand new analyst for the Kings, of course, Kings legend, sharing some great memories with us. I got to ask you, Mike, since it's Halloween, people talk about scary things. When you were playing, who was the scariest guy for you to guard? Maybe the toughest, maybe he was physical, for whatever reason. Who was the scariest guy for Mike Bibby to defend when you were an NBA player?
I would probably say either Stephon Marbury or Baron Davis.
Mm.
They probably gave me the toughest time because, I mean, they get a lot. The guards that took a lot of shots was kind of tough for me. You know, a guard that would get 20 to 25 shots, because that's going to make me work on, you know, kind of both ends. And I wouldn't say I was really there for my defense, but it was just tough because you had to play both ends of the court.
Baron Davis and Stephon.
B. Diddy, yeah, and Stephon. They were strong guards too, right? Strong with the ball. Mike, obviously looking forward to you tomorrow on the pre-half and post-game show. What's your thoughts on this year's Kings? What's the outlook for them? What are you looking for from this team?
I think hopefully they can make it to the West Coast Conference Championship. I was on a show this past year, a game, I was been for the Dallas. I was out of the country. I was hoping to come back and make it either game 5 or game 7, but I was out of the country, so I didn't get to make it. I thought they would get past that round, but they didn't. But I always have the confidence in them. I think that they're a young team. They can run. If they get on a run and Fox uses speed to, you know, kind of initiate and get everybody to run with him, I think they could go a long way.
Mike, real quick, before I let you go, man, I know that nap is calling you, big fella. I know you're looking forward to it. What's the message to Kings fans, man? Because I'm telling you, the buzz in the city, the vibe, having you back, having be a part of this, what do you want to say to Kings fans out there going into tomorrow?
I'm great to be back. It's great to be back. It's great to be a part of the Sacramento Kings again. And I'm here. Let's go. Let's bring it back to 2000, early 2000 vibes.
Mike Bibby.
Thank you,
our
Mike.
Guy. See you tomorrow, Mike.
Thank you for having me.
All right, man. Great stuff. Yes, sir.
Happy Halloween. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we will break down our conversation with, I think Jerry used to call him the Bibbinator, Mike Bibby. Well, that was a lot of fun. Thank you, Kyle, for lining up Mike Bibby. Congratulations to Mike Bibby. As we said, newest TV analyst for the Kings. But I had never heard some of the stories, specifically the one about his reaction when he got traded. And the coolest thing about that to me was the way he said, hey, you know, shout out to Jay Will, because he created a lot of that excitement.
Yeah, 100%. Jay Will obviously will always be a part of Kings lore here. And I love the fact that he was excited, talking about Bibby, excited to come to Sacramento.
Yeah.
He wanted to be here. It was at the top of his list. And that's sort of the vibe I'm getting now, too, is it's cool to be a Sacramento Kings fan. It's cool to be on the Sacramento Kings squad. You travel into cities now, Whitey, and, you know, you got 10, 15, 20 fans waiting outside of a hotel for a De'Aaron Fox signature or a Sabonis signature or something like that. You know, when the team was down, you'd arrive, nobody was there. Mm-hmm. Now you're starting to see that pick up, which is great to see.
Which, obviously, that's just a byproduct of all the hard work, but they can't, as Mike Brown is quick to remind them, and as we all know, they haven't done anything yet.
Right.
That was a wonderful year last year, but for a team with serious aspirations, they really haven't done anything yet.
Yeah, and they, to me, they were the best story in the NBA last year. You know, obviously snapping the streak, the drought, but to earn respectability, to be accepted into the club, you can't just be a one and done and then flame out. And that's what Mike Brown's trying to get these guys to do. And I said it the other day. No offense to the Atlanta Hawks, but the Atlanta Hawks, They're a good team, but they don't move the needle at all. They're sort of mediocre. You know, if you're Sacramento, you're trying to build something here. You want to compete for championships. You want to be with the Golden States, the Bostons, the Denvers of the world, the Milwaukees. And so what happened last year, the only reason I'm, if I'm Mike Brown and I'm looking back to last year, is using it as motivation for this year, really. Mm-hmm. You know, sure, you got some tape of teams and things like that, but what happened in terms of winning and losing, that's in the past. Like, you should remember Game 7, yes, in the way Steph Curry dropped 50 on you. That's what I would like to see this Kings remember. Remember that he dropped 41 on you the other night when you face him tomorrow and somebody step up. Like, but that's the only reason I'm looking in the rearview mirror.
I really appreciated what Mike said about the offense and how it's hard to prepare for. And if I may, and I know no one cares, but it just it reminds me of when I was coaching a young ladies team. They're a very good team. They would have won most of the games without a coach. But we ran some freelance stuff, and I'd see guys from, like, you know, scouts from the other teams would come, and they'd be watching us, and I'd see them, and I realized, you don't know what we're going to do because we don't know what we're going to do. You can't write it down. So with the Kings, and obviously at a much higher level, the Kings and the Warriors, when you have those kind of freelance things, yeah, it's hard to prepare for because what a player does depends on all these different circumstances. And the Warriors, I know the offenses aren't identical. The Warriors turn the ball over a lot, in part because of the nature of that offense. And that's why it's so impressive to me that, take, for example, the last game, the Kings, I think they had 10 turnovers. Mm-hmm. So they're able to play a more wide-open style, a little more freelance, and they take care of the ball, too. That's remarkable.
Yeah, and that's, you know, if you can do both, you know, because you bring up the Warriors' turnovers, when they lose games most of the time, it's because they turn the ball over. You know, they get sloppy with it, 19, 20 turnovers. They did that against us back on Friday. They still were able to win it, however, but the Kings made that charge, remember, in the fourth. What did they turn it over? I think 11 times or 8 times, something like that.
They almost literally
in the
let
quarter.
The Kings back.
Yeah.
And the Kings had something to do with that with the way they were trapped.
Exactly. But, you know, when I watched this Sacramento offense, and there was one possession the other night against the Lakers, Kevin Huerter had it, and he passed it to Domantas Sabonis at the top of the key. And Kevin Huerter was going to do a dribble handoff with Sabonis. But then Keegan Murray on the other side was coming up as well. And so you have to read what's happening on the floor. It's like read and react, sort of. Like, you know, a quarterback out there. It's read and react. And it's not, all right, you go from spot X to spot Y every time we run this play.
Right.
No, it's free-flowing basketball, and that's where high basketball IQ comes in. And so I think you got two of the best teams at it in the league right now, set to face off tomorrow.
It reminds me of a play that doesn't really have to do specifically with the type of offense they run, but it was a really impressive play. De'Aaron Fox in the game, fourth quarter. You probably remember this, and I think the Kings were up 4, and there's maybe about a minute to go, and the Kings get the rebound. I think LeBron might have missed a shot. So everyone starts walking up the floor because you figure – all right, this is time to run some clock.
Yeah.
And De'Aaron Fox doesn't
walk
to the floor, and he starts pushing it, and he pushes for Keegan. He points for Keegan. Go, go, go,
go, go.
Keegan runs to the wing, and Fox hits him, and he buries a three, kind of in transition because they caught the Lakers off guard.
Napping a little bit.
Yeah, and that speaks to, like you say, you got to be smart. You got to have a high IQ to play this type of offense efficiently, and they have smart players.
And that's why Mike Brown, you know, how he wants them to play. You know, up tempo, let it fly. Don't let the defense get set up. Always be in attack mode. And obviously, you know, into game clocks or into quarter clocks, you know, you want to hold for one possession. But Mike Brown wants this offense to be relentless. And, you know, it was funny because I was talking, I might have been talking to Ron Adams, the assistant coach of the Golden State Warriors, great defensive mind. And, you know, we were talking about offense and what the Kings do. And I think it was him. He was saying, you know, when you have an up-tempo offense like that, players want to play in that kind of – it's a free-flowing. They know they're going to get a ball. To Mike Bibby's point, you know, when you play with the Vancouver Grizzlies back in the day and you give it to Big Country or Sharif, you know you're not getting it back. And so – then you don't want to run the floor maybe as fast. You know, maybe you don't compete as hard on defense. But when you know you get touches, it's just like youth basketball. I tell kids I coach all the time, you have to involve everybody on offense. If you're going to ask them to bust their butt defensively, you got to reward players with the ball offensively. And that's the one thing about this Kings offense. Everybody's going to get their touches. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to get their chances. One night it might be Fox. The next night it's Sabonis, Herter. Who, like, if you play it the right way, everybody should get an opportunity.
Yeah, it's fun, and it's also a lot harder to guard.
Yes, yes, exactly. It's one of those, you know, and when you look at some of the other teams in the NBA, I'll throw the Lakers out there, for example. We know LeBron's going to have the ball a lot in his hands. Dallas even. Luka, we know that's much easier to guard, a one-on-one kind of player. James Harden, much easier to guard. That's what makes the Warriors so great because, you know, one through five, they can gash you, and the Kings are at that level too. You know, Sabonis can get you. Everybody on the floor is a threat in the Kings offense.
From the 916 here on the text line, Mike, come back. We could use you while Fox is out.
That would be nice, right? If he could hop in the hot tub time machine, and you were around when Bibby played. How would you characterize him as a heady player, tough player?
He was tough and a good shooter.
Yeah.
And you know, I just remember the game was different then when they'd have those series against the Lakers, you know, and he'd bring the ball up. He wasn't necessarily a pure point guard, but mm-hmm. he had to bring the ball up. And the Lakers used to batter him, but that was
really?
The way the game was then.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, he was a solid player, heady player,
he would shoot
clutch
a
player
ton
too.
Of threes if he played now.
Oh, he said, what did he say, 20 or something
he said
like 15? Oh, 15.
He'd settle for 15,
and he could knock him down too,
yes,
man. It's you know, and there's certain guys, Mitch Richmond, I'll throw in that, Mike Bibby, a guy in Boston, Antoine Walker. You remember Antoine mm-hmm. Walker? Mm-hmm. Antoine Walker played in today's game. Shit, I mean, shoot, I can't mm-hmm. say that. Shoot, he shot 8 threes a game back in early 2000s. Imagine what he would do right now.
Yeah, Gilbert Arenas.
Gilbert, yeah, yeah. Guys that could get
bit.
It up, let it fly, and not even worry about it. And so the game has definitely changed. And I wonder, too, when you look at LeBron and the scoring record, do you think that will ever be broken? Guys are playing 20 years now. Guys are taking a lot of threes now. You know, could that record be challenged? Ooh, I stumped you there. You're thinking. I was thinking, like, in today's day and age, if you have the health and you have the shooting,
the three-point shot, everything.
Yeah, changes everything.
I don't see it. I don't see, because I saw, as you did, as a lot of people did who are listening, you know, what Kareem did to set the record in the first place was absolutely remarkable.
Yeah.
He played at such a high level for so long. And then by the end, you know, he wasn't the same, but he was still a productive player. And then you see on top of that, okay, so LeBron basically is playing at his age. We've never seen anything like that. So can someone top that? It's hard to say no, but it's hard to imagine.
It's hard to imagine, right?
Yeah.
I mean, LeBron's going to finish with more than 40,000 points.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to average 25 to 30 a season for 20 years. Like, it's one of those stats where it's crazy to think of somebody breaking it. But if somebody does, it'll be because of the three-point shot, I think.
Well, someday we'll end up with a LeBron-type player, which, you know, that's just disrespectful
I know,
to
right?
say that.
I thought he was a once-in-a-generation.
Yeah.
Like,
but somebody who's somewhat similar to him, who's like a Curry,
yeah,
LeBron hybrid.
Think
and
about
if we
it.
Get
with
that,
the jump
like,
shot,
well,
too, like
yeah,
Curry?
Yeah, that's
oh
what
my
I'm saying.
Gosh. Unstoppable.
Yeah. So the records will be tumbling then. Oh, we'll take a quick break when we come back. Can we get back to Brock Purdy for just a second?
Do we
here?
Have to?
Can we get back
I'm
to Brock
I'm trying to
Purdy?
Lay off Brock. I don't want to come at him
well,
anymore.
Well, I'll tell you why. Giving up on Brock Purdy right now is not a smart thing to do. I'll tell you why when we come right back in the Drive Guys, Sactown Sports. We are all Drive Guys. Thanks for your participation. Let's see what the smartest viewers on YouTube and listeners and radio have to say today. You can hit us up on the chat, YouTube, or text line. Give us a call, 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Derek Vercelli, you know, we were talking about players from the past who would be prolific three-point shooters today. Derek says, Jay Richardson from the Warriors, early 2000s.
Yeah, he was a great three-point shooter, right? He competed in the three-point contest and a dunk contest.
He was a dunk contest winner.
Yeah, dunk contest winner. Yeah, he could do it all.
Amadrox says, we're in the day and age of load management. We won't see stats like those anymore.
I had not considered that. That could be a factor. You're right, 100%.
And Steven Torres, you know, we were talking about old T-shirts earlier. I have shorts that I've had since high school, 16 years old. My girlfriend just told me last week I can only wear them fishing or watching football with the boys. Spine check on Isle Steven, huh? Your girlfriend doesn't tell you when you can wear your shorts, right?
Yes, she does.
What?
Because he didn't put a ring on it first. It's his girlfriend, Whitey. His girlfriend. That means she has options to leave if she wants.
Oh, okay.
So if you don't do what she says, sayonara. And so now when he puts a ring on it, you're married. Now you're connected, you know. But girlfriend, please. Come on, man.
All right. Well, maybe it's a deal breaker for you, Steven. I'm just think about it.
What kind of shorts, too, is he talking about? Like, remember the old school champion shorts back in the day? Those are coming back. Like, the short shorts are actually coming back with these kids nowadays.
I may have some. I may have to see if I still have
right, exactly. That's the thing about fashion, right? Just hold on to it for about 30 years or so, and it'll come back.
Uh-huh. Brock Purdy's coming back, too, you know.
Give me that. Do we got to talk? You know what?
Brock Purdy's coming back.
This is the last time this week I talk. It's a bye week. Can I get a bye week from Brock Purdy talk?
Here is why. No.
Okay.
Here's why giving up on Brock Purdy right now is not a smart thing to do. He's pressured last week on 46.2% of his dropbacks. He is out there fighting for his life.
Oh, my God.
All right? One of the things that you hear naysayers say about Brock Purdy, perhaps you are one. Perhaps you have said
this. Yeah, I might
yourself.
Have said this. What you got?
They've said it, you know, he's a pea shooter. He doesn't have a strong arm. Dink and dunk. He's just throwing short stuff or, you know, over the middle, short pass.
Nobody says that. Why do you?
No, I believe I've heard people
frame
say that.
I'm gonna let you frame this, but go ahead. Nobody said he's dinking and dunking. Go ahead.
Against the Bengals, Brock Purdy. And by, you know, the interceptions have to stop, period.
Yes.
If they don't stop, you can't play him. They have to stop. But he completed 4 of 5 attempts of 20 or more yards. I'm not talking about a 6-yard pass and then running for 14. 20-yard air attempts. He attempted 5 passes or 20 or more yards against the Bengals. Completed 4 of them. The other one bounced off of Brandon Ayuk's face mask. That's pretty good. But people look at the, oh, what's wrong with Brock Purdy? Oh, the interceptions. Yeah, I knew it. I knew he was no good. I knew there was a reason why nobody drafted him until the 49ers took him last. I'm telling you, he actually is doing some really good things this year. He has actually improved over last year in terms of being aggressive, taking shots downfield. Again, the turnovers have to stop or it doesn't matter. You can't keep throwing the ball to the other team. But Brock Purdy and against Minnesota, against Cincinnati, other than the interceptions, which were backbreaking, he played very well, and he moved the chains in a way that some of his naysayers say he's not capable of doing. So give up on Brock Purdy right now.
Brock Purdy's a good quarterback. Can I say it again? Do I need to look into my single shot here on the YouTube chat and say Brock Purdy is a good quarterback, Niners fans? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I haven't been the one that says he's just dinking and dunking. I've been saying the receivers are running wide open. When Brandon Ayuk, there's no defender within 4 or 5 yards of him, it's easy to make the throw. That's what I've been saying. And give him credit. He has made some great throws. And I forget who it was earlier today. Maybe you sent this out or maybe we talked about it earlier. But Brock Purdy, for most of that game, he's made some great throws. So, you know, you can't just bash him for the interceptions like I've been doing and the turnovers without also giving him credit for some of the throws that he's made during those games.
I think some of the people that are naysayers, and you may end up being right. I don't think so, but I understand why people would say Brock Purdy's no good. But some people said Brock Purdy wasn't very good. Then he played well, and you didn't hear from them. And then he throws the interceptions. And they're saying, well, see, I told you. What they're overlooking is he made some big-time throws in that game against the Bengals. I think even Tony Romo said, this is a high-level high-level throw
he did
he's
that.
Made here.
Several times
Tony
he
Romo,
said that.
Tony Romo sounds like a dog who's been debarked, doesn't he?
He got clipped, huh? He got the vocal cords.
Because he's been yelling for so long his whole life. So he... Yes.
Why'd you diss Tony Romo like that, man?
That's a fact. I'm not dissing him. You can hear it, the poor guy.
I thought he was quite entertaining this week, Tony Romo was.
He
was very good, I thought, watching this game. But to that point regarding Brock Purdy, I think what we need to see from him, he's good enough to be a good regular season quarterback. He can lead you to the NFC Championship game. But when it comes time, and they said this on during the telecast, I think, or on ESPN this
morning.
Or
maybe you made it up. Whatever.
Or maybe I made it up. When you got to go against the game's greatest quarterbacks, the Joe Burrows, the Mahomes, and I know you're going against their team's defense, but you have to outplay them. I will tell you this right now, Whitey, and tell me if you agree with me. In the playoffs, in the biggest of games, in the Super Bowl, teams rarely win when their quarterbacks are outplayed by the other team's quarterback. And so that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
If Brock Purdy is going to have to outplay Josh Allen, outplay Patrick Mahomes, outplay Jalen Hurts, outplay Jared Goff, outplay Dak Prescott in the playoffs. Like, those are the things I want to see from Brock Purdy. He can make throws. We've seen that. But when it comes time to lead you to a win, can he do that? We have yet to see that.
He did win a couple playoff games last year. But all right, it's fair
point. But 19-12 against that.
What I'm saying is that he is taking some shots downfield and having some success with that.
Yeah.
I think he's shown growth in that area. I do. Also, I would say this, and let's just take a wider view. This isn't so much just Brock Purdy, but the offense against the Bengals, you know, you look at that, it's like, wow, they were terrible. They averaged offensively 8.2 yards per play.
Mm.
That's the highest for their offense since a game against the Bears in 2021. So I know, 17 points is 17 points. But I think this is an indication. Forget Brock Purdy for a minute. The bigger problem for them is the defense. The offense, they need to score more points. But that's why this is such a big day. They get Chase Young. If he does improve the pass rush, I think that starts to move everything for the 49ers. Everything. Plus the good health, better health, in the right direction. Fingers crossed.
Does Chase Young help you with the ground game in terms of stopping the run? Because there were some gaping holes this past week for the Bengals.
Absolutely.
Joe Mixon was running through.
Totally true.
He would get 8 yards and didn't get touched.
Absolutely.
So, Chase Young, great defensive lineman, great pass rusher. You know, my thing is there's so many holes. Not saying that they're far off, but if they want to be a Super Bowl champion, they got to shore up the defensive line when it comes to the pass rush, but also stopping the run as well.
I agree completely.
You know, like totally that's been a huge issue. And if you can't stop the run, you're not going to win football games. And that's, we saw it against Cleveland. We saw it, against Minnesota. We saw it last week against the Bengals. These teams are gashing them. Sure, the quarterbacks are playing well, but they're doing it also with the run game.
Yeah, I agree. And that's one of their biggest problems. I agree. Can he address that?
Yeah.
Can Chase Young address that?
We'll see.
I don't know.
We'll see.
Fingers crossed. But you're right. If they don't plug that leak, however you want to phrase it, they're not going to win a Super Bowl. They're just not.
Right.
There's no way you're going to win a Super Bowl.
No, that's 100%. And there's still time, obviously. This team came within a few injuries away from making the Super Bowl. So I don't believe that they need to go out there and make all these kind of moves and everything with the defense. They have the personnel. They just got to be better. I said it earlier. The players just have to be better.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. On this Halloween, we will look at what is very scary about the Kings matchup with the Warriors tomorrow night. That's next with the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.